Okay, it's really a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Mercy. So this was really fun to be able to speak to you guys, and I'm so impressed that there's like a standing room only audience here, so hopefully I can give you some useful information. I guess when I had prepared this talk, I was reflecting on what I wish someone had told me when I was starting in my career, and I threw up these names of universities and a little piece of paper there at the end, because this is kind of what happens in our lives. There's this list of universities and a little piece of paper at the end which somehow signifies our lives. But really, when I look at this list, what I really see is, oh gosh, Virginia Tech. I went there as an undergraduate because my parents moved from North Carolina to Virginia, and we didn't have enough money to pay out-of-state tuition so I could go back to North Carolina. So that's where I ended up. South Carolina, you know, I went to visit my sister and fell in love with the University of South Carolina, ended up there. My professor there, while I got my master's in biochemistry, he was from UC Berkeley and started telling me about this amazing place, California. The next thing you know, I went to a conference and met cool people from UC Davis, and I went there. And then the next thing I knew, I was married, and I didn't want to leave my husband and go too far, so I just went down the road and did a postdoctoral fellowship at Stanford. At Stanford, I was looking for jobs in academia, and I had a baby almost simultaneously, and Stanford said, hey, why don't you stay here and teach some really hard courses that the faculty really don't want to teach, and stay on as a lecturer? And I thought, cool, that'll be fun to do for a couple of years. And, you know, the next thing you know, 20 years went by. Okay, the end of my story here where I am today is a friend of mine actually started an LED lighting company, and I started to go, wow, this is more than just lighting, and if you've been to some of the controlled environment talks, you're starting to hear about how spectrum can really do amazing things. My kids at this point were bigger than me and grown and kind of out of the house, and I thought, this might be a super cool time to change and do something else. So even though it looks like a linear progression of some organized career, it was very much a migration in many different directions. So one of the things that I've noticed as I read reviews of applications to medical school or to graduate school, and I interview lots and lots of people as they come to look for jobs, is sometimes they really don't know who they are professionally. So I think it's actually super important for you to kind of ask yourself this and to come in with this confidence of knowing who you are professionally. Do you like being a big fish in a little pond or a little fish in a big pond? Certainly at Stanford, I was a tiny fish in a little pond. You know, do you want to go into a startup where it's going to be very stressful and, you know, you may be running out of money every other day? Or would you rather be in an established environment like working at a Bayer or a BASF or, you know, some big company where there's, you know, actual benefits and sense of stability? Do you like to work independently on your project? Would you rather like not really be reporting to people except every month or two? Or do you want to have clear project guidelines? Are you a loner? Or are you a team player? I'm much more of a team player. I get lost when I'm working by myself for too long. So admit these things to yourself and own them, I guess is what I'm saying, because I think you'll be happier in the end. Okay. Do you like to be really hands-on, or would you rather some, you know, research associate be bringing you piles of data that you're reviewing? Are you a jack-of-all-trades, or do you really like to focus on one particular discipline? These are all super important things that you need to know about yourself. You also need to know who you are personally. I think this is something people really underestimate when they go and look for a job. They're kind of this feeling sometimes of being desperate for jobs. But, you know, like our previous speaker said, the jobs are out there. And if you, again, know who you are professionally and personally, it will happen for you. Do you love the cities? I had a friend who, she was very committed to playing ice hockey. So she wouldn't move anywhere that didn't have a hockey rink. So she actually lives in Boston right now. Or do you love the countryside? I mean, one of my favorite scientists is Neil Matson at Cornell University. I personally don't know if I could live in Cornell University. It's so far out in the middle of nowhere. You know, do you love to travel or do you hate to travel? What are your hobbies? Do you like, you know, I put, you know, like sort of skiing, surfing, hiking, or do you like film festivals and art museums? Are you married or you're single? I had a friend who took a professorship at a university, maybe I shouldn't name, small school in the middle of the country, and she actually hoped to get married eventually, but she found that she could not meet any eligible bachelors in this area, and she ended up changing jobs essentially for that. She was lonely. You know, so just thinking about who you are as a person and what you want, what you enjoy. is really important. And I've counseled a lot of medical students on this also, or graduate students. It's like, you know, this is your life. You're going to be there for a good solid 5 years. You know, think about this. Think about why you're leaving academics. Are they good reasons that you're leaving? Are you just bored? Are you not being challenged by the colleagues that you have? Is it a lack of funding? Maybe you can't get the students you want. Maybe you can't attract the team that you want. Have they eliminated the position? At Stanford, they eliminated 25% of the non-academic positions 1 year, which was a big startling thing that happened to a lot of us. Maybe you didn't get tenure. That's okay. Some universities have a very strong philosophy. At Stanford, we had the strong philosophy that if we hired a person, it was our responsibility as a department to make sure you got tenure. That was our job as fellow faculty members. You know, our school, Harvard, you know, it's kind of our competition on the East Coast. I mean, they had a philosophy much more of like burning through assistant professors. It was just like, hey, you're here for 7 years and then you're gone unless you've done something extraordinary. But again, it was just a real different philosophy of what that meant. So don't be ashamed if you didn't get tenure and you're looking to say, hey, I'm done with academia. Maybe family issues. Maybe you get divorced. Maybe you just needed a change. And all these things will impact your approach to a transition and as you interview and look for jobs. And I guarantee you that if you talk to anyone over about 35, they have faced all these different issues and will be very empathetic and understanding and probably be helpful to helping you sort of swim across whatever transitions you're facing. Okay, so if you know who you are and you know what you want, it helps point you in the right direction. So don't just look at the job listings. What I've found is that quite frequently there's the job listings that you know you see, but if you knock on enough doors, they will create jobs for you. The jobs are there. And this has happened time and time again for people that have come to me, and it's like I'd say, I don't have a job. In fact, two of my research associates right now, I said, you know, I don't have a job for you. I don't have a job for you. And they just kept coming to me and saying, well, I'm really interested in what you're doing. And finally, between, you know, their persistence and, you know, them kind of flattering me enough, it was like, okay, fine. You know, I'll create a job for you. And I've seen that at my company. Like, we create initially a job that we didn't even think we had. I was looking at the job board at Plenty Unlimited, which is a vertical growing factory in San Francisco and in Wyoming. And I noticed that one of the job openings they have that they keep on their site is called a unicorn. And it really, as you click on it, it says, hey, if you didn't see your job listed here, just apply for what you think you'd like to do here. And I think that more and more places, again, particularly smaller companies, Plenty is about 200 people, Lumigrow is about 35 people, we don't really know what we want sometimes. So if you come to us and say, hey, I've looked at your website, I've read about your products, you know, I think I could do this. It's very, very compelling. Okay, so that's kind of what I was saying in the second point. You know, persistence pays off. The squeaky wheel gets the oil. And it doesn't hurt to ask. So again, sometimes again, it's easy to kind of go, well, there's only this job and that job, particularly in industry. This is more true in academia where the jobs are delineated by the state or by the funding that's available. But in industry, there really is a lot more latitude to create jobs for the right person. Okay, let me tell you some about preconceived notions. And I sort of suffer from this every single day. You know, I'll go to management meetings and they'll be like, oh, yeah, Melanie, you know, you still have this ivory tower academic, you know, perspective. Because they assume that, you know, I have this kind of like lofty, you know, like pure kind of thing, which is a little bit true, but, you know, not quite as much as companies like to think. Whereas I think, you know, academia tends to look at companies a little bit like, oh, you'll just sell anything. You know, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't work. And that's not quite true either. There's kind of the feeling that all people in academia are sort of vaguely, you know, hidden communists in that, you know, it's like everything is kind of like we should all be like one for all and all for one. And there's a little bit of truth in that, too. But one of the things I get yelled at when I go to meetings is like, Melanie, please just don't give away more of our equipment this trip. In academia, there's the belief that you're like so totally free to do whatever you want. You're poor but happy. But, you know, again, that you want to share data with the world, that you're very argumentative, that there's a publish-or-perish mentality, that it's very stable, that you'll have that job forever. So actually, you know, by contrast, you know, I gave the example of bear crop science, you know, that it appears stable, but as we all know, bear crop science, a big part of bear crop science right now used to be called Monsanto, so it's not as stable as we might think. Some people sort of look at industry as kind of a prison. I think that's kind of a negotiable thing, too. You can actually come in often, and at some of these bigger companies, I know people say, well, okay, maybe I can't publish the information that I found out about different crops that are of interest, like maybe corn or alfalfa, or but I can publish on Arabidopsis. So you can negotiate that. Maybe there's more money. There's that perception. Maybe even stock in a startup. There's the perception that you're controlled by NDAs and there's lots of secrets. But again, there's ways around that. That there's no grant writing. Actually, there is quite a bit of writing still. Can't get away from that. And then, like I say, you know, everybody has this perception. But these are kind of some of the prejudices that you come into when you come into an interview in industry, and just be aware of them. Okay, so I think the biggest thing, too, when you come in and think about going into academia, ask lots and lots and lots of questions, because these are the people that you're going to be living with. These are the people you actually will be spending most of your life with. So find out about the culture. Like we mentioned before, you know, can you actually still publish? Can you still get out to conferences like this and speak? You know, that was a high priority to me, to be still a part of the Horticulture Society and to be able to come to, you know, this meeting every year. You know, little things, other extreme. You know, some offices are very quiet. Some of them had music. Some of them are very open. Like there's a very popular trend right now to not have any offices, where everybody just like works in one giant room. It's a little bit crazy. Long hours and weekends. You know, what's the structure of that? How do people really work? Is there unlimited vacation? That's a very popular trend right now. Unlimited vacation, which translates into sounds really good. What it translates into is take as little vacation as you feel like you absolutely need to be sane. Another big one in the Bay Area right now is everybody brings their dog to work. That's the new startup cool thing. In addition to having all the food that they can feed you, you know, like lunches and stuff like that, any company above about 200 people will usually have a chef come in and make lunches for you. But you should also be able to bring your dog. So how does look at the website. How does it feel? Is this a kind of a website that feels like, yeah, this feels like who I am? Look at that. Again, like I mentioned to you previously, I was visiting Plenty recently, and I was looking at some of the vertical growing websites, and it was surprising how each one was very, very different, and you could actually get a strong sense of the different personalities of the companies just by looking at the websites. Does everybody like each other? Do they do fun things together? You know, how do they celebrate the holidays? Do they go bowling together? Is that important to you? These are things to think about. And I put in one thing here, are there bullies? Sometimes companies are dominated by bully figures, and that's something to really watch out for. I've noticed that there can be these dominant figures which can have a strong impact on the culture of the company. And, you know, it might be a good bully, but it's like someone, you know, can be very dominant, and you want to watch out for that. And so when you go into an interview, know that you're interviewing them more than they're interviewing you, believe me. So ask for what you want. You deserve it. And I say you'll never look better. This was something that I learned from people that went to business school and have an MBA. They say you'll never look better than the day you interviewed at your company. So never go into an approach where saying, like, after I work for 6 months, then I'm going to ask for this. Ask for things right when you're negotiating the job. Ask for the salary you want. Ask for things that you maybe didn't even think about. You know, certainly moving expenses. I once negotiated for childcare for my children during a transition. And it was like, you can ask for things. Again, they can say no. But ask for the things you want and don't wait. Because in that initial relationship, you're setting the stage for, this is who I am, this is what I want, this is what I need to do a good job for you. So don't be afraid to ask for what you want. Okay, and this is almost my last slide, I think. And so whatever plan you make, just realize that it's not going to be what you think it's going to be, because life will throw you curveballs all the time, usually about every 5 years. I've talked to a lot of people, and it seems like things are going along pretty smoothly, you know, like the talk we just heard, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, this crazy thing happened. So people change, companies change. I was looking just on Wikipedia at the history of Monsanto recently, and I was surprised to find that they used to be an LED manufacturer. So, I mean, who would have thought? But, you know, you look at these companies that, you know, 40 years ago, they might not have even been doing anything similar to what they're doing right now. But, you know, in life, there's the famous quote that failure is never as painful as regret, so go for it. And at the end of the day, you know, have fun. Life is not a foot race. As a teacher at Stanford, again, most of my students were so about, oh, my gosh, you know, I want to make the highest score, and I want to win the trophy, and I want to be the valedictorian or whatever. And I'm like, you don't win. You don't win life. You have to really enjoy life. And this was like a startling fact to most of the students who'd been like what I call teacher pleasers, you know, parent pleasers, or pleasers of their boss. I mean, that was really like the structure of how they had geared their life, was who can I please, these authority figures. And at some point it's like, you know, these authority figures don't matter that much. You really do have to have a sense of who you are and what you enjoy and what makes you get out of bed in the morning. So anyway, so as I close, I just want to thank you for listening. And if you ever want to call me or text me or email me and chat some more, and I'm just showing up a picture of my dog and my team. So thank you very much.